My name is Nelson Mandela. I look back to the achievements not of individuals, but to the achievements of collective action. A group of men and women, that is the nature of our struggle. Without that struggle, we would still be under apartheid. It is always important to look at your history. You can't really be proud of yourself if you don't know your history.
This is Desmond Tutu. In 1994, the world watched as millions of South Africans cast their ballots in our country's first fully democratic election. After all the votes were counted, Nelson Mandela was president of a new South Africa. Mandela's journey from freedom fighter to president is one of the most dramatic stories of our lifetime. But many have never heard the story from those of us who lived and struggled in South Africa in the days of hatred and bigotry and violence. So here then is Mandela, an audio history.
The program that follows is about the people of South Africa.
1935, 1940, 1945. A nation develops into the premier industrial power on the African continent.
The Golden City, South Africa's Johannesburg. Millions of pounds worth of gold comes out of Joburg each year. With this wealth, the people of the city live well and happily. Truly, this is the finest of all the world's golden cities.
As a white citizen, you had social status, you had beautiful schools, you had parks, you had everything that you desire, and you had the highest standard of living in the world. Blacks were just pushed out.
The population of South Africa was about 10 million. 2 million and a bit were whites and dominated everything. And there were gold mines and diamond mines with huge economic potential based on very cheap black labour.
It was a master-servant relationship. We had domestic staff who were black, but they lived in their own quarters. They were the nannies and the cleaners and the gardeners.
We were taught that the whites were superior people. And we were told when we were young that if you do good in this life, your next life will become better. And I remember promising myself that I'm going to be a good little boy so that my next life I wanted to be a white person. That was my goal in life. And I determined to be a good boy.
We come from far away places to the Golden City. We've left our parents miles and miles away.
By 1940, I mean, you had this flood of people coming into the cities. And Mandela went to Johannesburg to work.
Lord, make us one.
I remember when I arrived in Johannesburg in the early 40s, the fear, you know, of the power of the white man inhibited us a great deal, and the government was becoming very tough.
News from Government House Pretoria, where South Africa's newly elected Prime Minister, Dr. Malan, was sworn in at the beginning of a new chapter in South Africa's history.
At the time of the 1948 elections, the Nationalist Party under D.F. Malan preached what they called Baaskap. Baaskap is an Afrikaans word to express white domination.
The color question is rapidly increasing in seriousness and urgency. I consider apartheid, that's the separation policy, to be South Africa's last chance to remain a white man's country.
Well, the appeal was survival. The appeal was, we are a small minority on a black continent, and we number so many millions, and the black number X times that millions. And if we are to survive in Africa, and here we are, and we've been here since 1652, we have got to survive. And the way to survive is to maintain domination. Simple as that.
I remember I came out of Park Station that morning and bought a newspaper and learned that the National Party had won. And Comrade Oliver Tambo said, well, I like this because we now know that we have an enemy in power. And I think that we're going to have a better opportunity of mobilizing our people. So when they came into power, it became clear that we were going to be put under a very severe test.
In these circumstances, the government has decided on the following measures. A prohibition on meetings has been...
And immediately after 1948, the apartheid government announced that it was introducing a new series of laws.
The Group Areas Act. There was an Immorality Act so that you couldn't have sexual relations across the colour line. Race classification, which laid down for all time your colour and your category, white, coloured, Indian or black. So all these things came in one after the other.
Where you lived, how you lived, what educational system you're going to go through, the type of jobs that you got, where you're going to be buried. Everything from birth to death was determined after the apartheid government came into power.
It lays a tremendous responsibility upon those people who govern the country. Responsibility which the white man feels of his duty towards these underdeveloped people who are not capable of governing themselves, who would fall to pieces if we were not there to look after their interests.
The coloured man must always carry these passes.
Photographs are taken at the offices of the Department of Native Affairs. Daily, a large number turns up here for reference books. Each book contains the photograph of the owner, his name, race, and particulars of employment.
They use this crude method of putting a pencil through your hair. If the pencil sticks, then you are black or African. If it falls off, you've got a chance of being classified colored.
Naturally, the officials who are employed here must have a thorough knowledge of Bantu customs and languages.
Each time you left your home, you had to make sure that you have a little book in your pocket. And if you didn't have that piece of paper, some ignorant, stupid youngster in the police force could stop you and demand that you identify yourself. If you couldn't, they locked you up.
At 9 o'clock, a big bell would ring, dong, dong, and you knew that was for you, if you were black, to get out of the white city.
Dr. Malanu nomteto nzima. Dr. Malanu nomteto nzima. Dr. Malan has got very strange rules. We're stopping me from doing that and this and the other in my own land. And people in the street would start singing, Dr. Malanu nomteto nzima. Andazuguba soshona pi.
In the 50s, the apartheid structure was tightening. Situation was becoming so much worse, you know.
And as Uguba Soshona P.
The communities, they'd been intimidated, cowed down, but we knew the feeling among the vast majority of the people was that this system cannot continue and must do something about it.
In Johannesburg, premier city of South Africa, there was staged last weekend the first move in a campaign that may lead to civil disobedience. Thousands of coloured people went to attend a protest meeting called by the African National Congress. This is the most important African organisation in the Union, and it called on all coloured people to protest against the racial segregation laws. A crowd of some thousands made their way to the meeting.
We now began to feel that the time had come for the emergence of a mass organisation to go out into the highways and organize the masses of the people.
You needed somebody to lead the people. You needed somebody who could make the people believe in the organization. Mandela had what it took to actually be out there in the front leading the movement.
Since then, the Congress leaders have announced that they will decide later this month whether to launch a civil disobedience campaign. This would urge all colored people to break the unjust laws and to court arrest.
The first thing we did was the Defiance Campaign of 1952, when the ANC decided that all the unjust laws would simply be broken. You know, to be part of that kind of movement, to defy the laws and be arrested, and Christ, I mean, it was exciting. We knew that we could do something.
And for 8,500 people to be arrested at the time in 1952 was no small achievement. The mood had been created that our struggle was reaching a dimension where it could not be crushed.
In 1960, on the 21st of March, the PAC, Pan-African Congress, made preparations to launch an anti-pass campaign.
So on this particular day, word went out that all passbooks must be burnt to actually light up these passes and burn them. The slogan was, away with the passes. The atmosphere was electric, you know, to join in the bonfire, you know. I remember that vividly. You know, as a kid, you know, you always love to see fire. You know. It was fun, I mean. But of course, later in the day, we heard news came over the radio.
Here is a special announcement. The Governor General has proclaimed a state of emergency in about 80 of the 300 magisterial districts of the Union.
Several hundred natives gathered peaceably to protest the pass laws. Police mounted on tanks opened fire. 69 natives were killed, 176 wounded. Most of the victims were shot in the back. Some of the dead were children, women, and elderly men.
Here were people just marching to the police station to hand over a passbook, and the police opened fire on them. For the first time, it showed the world how brutal the apartheid system could be.
The Prime Minister assured the country that law and order would be maintained. If necessary, the Defence Force would be called in.
There was a mood among people following the Sharpeville massacre that we had to start dealing with the armed forces of the state, the armed might of the apartheid state.
Mr. Mandela then made a statement saying, how do we combat such a brutal foe? We must consider other methods, other means. And the other methods, other means was violence. We felt, you know, it just cannot continue.
In the 1950s, South Africa began one of the most extreme experiments in racial separation the world had ever seen. As the repression grew worse, Nelson Mandela and his comrades decided they must use new tactics to break the white domination of the country. Here is part two of Mandela, an audio history.
Prime Minister Dr. H.F. Verwoerd and Mrs. Verwoerd arrived for the Republic Festival Parade at the Voortrekker Monument.
Hendrik Verwoerd was generally regarded as the chief architect of this grand apartheid policy. It was his idea in the late 50s to separate the country into a white nation and a series of independent states for the various black tribes.
My friends,
This republic is part of the white man's domain in the world.
When Dr. Favud took over, there's no doubt there was a change. And he was an extremely impressive speaker, I must tell you. In fact, you used to listen to him speaking for 3 hours without a note, adding one thing after the other, and you sat there nodding your head like a zombie until it suddenly occurred to you it's all based on a false premise.
Our policy is one which is called by an Afrikaans word apartheid. It could much better be described as a policy of good neighborliness.
He had convinced himself and a large number of well-meaning Afrikaners that there was nothing repressive about the system. It was simply separation. They had their areas and the whites had their areas. This is our only way of survival. We maintain the army, the police, the vote, and we keep it that way.
Watch out, Pervert. The black man will get you. Watch out, Pervert. The world sings with me.
The government was powerful. The government was strong. And the laws were coming far and more stringent, you know.
Political activity was getting nowhere. In fact, the situation was getting worse. White South Africa and its government simply determined it would crush the struggle. I tried.
Armored cars and armed police swooped onto the Nyanga township 10 miles from Cape Town, aided by spotting aircraft. 1,500 natives were arrested and questioned. 162 were kept in prison.
There was a state of emergency in the 1960s. Thousands of people were arrested. Many were detained.
The ANC had been declared illegal. So Oliver Tambo was sent out of the country. And some of the other leaders followed. Mandela, it was decided, should stay in the country. And he carried on his work underground.
I went to see a 42-year-old African lawyer, Nelson Mandela, the most dynamic leader in South Africa today. The police were hunting for him at the time, but African nationalists had arranged for me to meet him at his hideout. He is still underground. This is Mandela's first television interview. I asked him what it was that the African really wanted.
The Africans require the franchise on the basis of one man, one vote. They want political independence.
Now, if Dr. Vervoort's government doesn't give you the kind of concessions that you want sometime soon, is there any likelihood of violence?
There are many people who feel that it is useless and futile for us to continue talking peace and non-violence against a government whose reply is only savage attacks on an unarmed and defenseless people. And I think the time has come for us to consider whether the methods which we have applied so far are adequate.
I had made a statement where I called for armed struggle. Naturally, there was a great deal of resistance from the leadership, but I believed that we were moving into that situation because the government had left us with no other alternative.
The adoption of an armed struggle after a struggle that had been well known for its non-violent and peaceful character was somewhat startling.
The Gandhian concept, in our view, couldn't work in South Africa. In India, the British colonial administration could pack up and go home. But that would not happen in South Africa. There were, at the time, 2 or 3 million whites who were part of South Africa. They'd been here so long. These people were not going home. And so, in the ANC, we set about creating an underground, illegal fighting force to make sure that South Africans and the world would know what's going on.
Mandela then started looking for a name. What are we going to call this movement? And he suggested the Xhosa name Umkhonto weSizwe, which meant Spear of the Nation. Umkhonto weSizwe.
At the end of 1961, the bombing campaign started. Its targets, power supplies, post offices, telephone booths and pass offices. Objects, not people. The aim was to shock the government into negotiating.
One of their objects was to destroy the records of the passes they detest having to carry.
There were explosions, many in Johannesburg, power pylons, government pass offices. They weren't just random, callous explosions that just happened to be. There had to be an understanding by the mass of the people that organized armed resistance had started. The only deaths were our own people who were careless with their explosives.
As far as the government of South Africa is concerned, the breakdown of law and order in South Africa will not be tolerated under any circumstances whatsoever.
We were branded terrorists by the whole Western world. I mean, they'd have nothing to do with us. Well, as somebody has said, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter.
Asikatali no mabesbopa sizimisele inkululeko.
Of course, it would have been naive for us to think we could stand in battle against an army, air force, navy, police force, reservists of 400,000 people. But if you don't have crazy dreams, you do nothing.
We don't care whether they arrest us, they torture us. We are prepared to fight for our freedom.
We used to sing a song. One stick, two sticks, six sticks of dynamite will take the country the Castro way. Now, remember, Castro's campaign was a very short campaign. Within a space of 2 years, they had overrun Cuba. So here we were, the comrades were all singing this song, as if to say in 6 months' time we'd be free. 6 months' time we were languishing in prison.
A remarkable demonstration by a crowd of several hundred outside the courthouse in Pretoria. Nelson Mandela, his wife you just saw, leader and founder of the sabotage movement Spirit of the Nation and a leading member of African National Congress, accused with the others of plotting sabotage to overthrow the South African government by force.
From day one of our arrest, the police drummed it into our heads, you are going to die. You are going to hang. And the first day, the lawyer said, chaps, prepare for the worst. And that remained their attitude right through the trial.
Firstly, the state alleges the planned purpose thereof was to bring about chaos, disorder, and turmoil in the battle to be waged against the white man in this country.
They were called terrorists. We knew that there was no hope of getting an acquittal. The question was, what do we do with a trial?
Our approach was one of defiance, because we said, it is the government that is a criminal and that should be standing in the dock to face a trial. We are not guilty.
That, my lord, is the case for the state.
When the defense case started, Mandela, he was going to be the first defense witness. And the prosecution, Dr. Yuta, had prepared extensively to cross-examine Mandela and break him down. And they all got a shock when our lawyers announced that Mandela will not give evidence, but he'll make a statement from the dock.
The courtroom was absolutely packed. He stood up and he proceeded to deliver the speech.
During my lifetime, I have dedicated my life to this struggle of the African people. And I have.
It was a 4-hour speech. But that last bit where he said, these are the ideas for which I'm prepared to die. Just that last bit.
I knew what he was going to say because we'd all seen the speech, everybody had made comments about it. And I knew he was going to say, in effect, hang me if you dare to, Mr. Judge. But only when he said it.
I have cherished the idea of a democratic and free society in which all persons will live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an idea for which I hope to live for. But my Lord, if it needs be, it is an idea for which I am prepared to die.
It was terribly moving. Nobody said anything. Even the judge didn't know what to say. I knew it was a moment of history. He emerged then as a great leader.
As your lordship. Very well, the court will then adjourn.
I remember we adjourned for lunch and a friendly African warder asked me the question, Mandela, what do you think is going to happen to you in this case? I said to him, they are going to hang us. Now, I was really expecting some word of encouragement from him. And I thought he was going to say, Manisi, that can never happen. But he became serious. And then he said, I think you're right, they're going to hang you.
The next day, armed police massed in even greater force as Mr. Justice De Wet was passing sentence.
I am by no means convinced that the motive of the accused were as altruistic as they wish the court to believe.
When they said, stand up for your sentence, we thought, well, here it comes.
The sentence in the case of all the accused will be one of life imprisonment.
As you thought. Very well, the court will then adjourn.
And we laughed. We turned to each other and laughed because we expected to be hanged.
At the back entrance to the Pretoria Court, large crowds gather to watch the accused being driven away to start their life sentences.
Nelson Mandela did become the symbol of the struggle for liberation in South Africa. People could identify with Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela the lawyer, Nelson Mandela the hero, Nelson Mandela the handsome man. But it was the response to his Rivonia trial speech, called throughout the world as the I am prepared to die speech, which kind of somersaulted him and the African National Congress and the need to put an end to apartheid into the world consciousness.
As we're being flown to Robben Island, one tried to accept the reality that we may in fact spend years in prison. But we believed very strongly that we would not die in jail. We would return.
Baila bafa